This is All In. I'm Miriam Stobe. Today we're talking about Hudox, a video streaming service launched earlier this summer that was exclusively built to present Indiana documentaries. Throughout the hour, we'll talk to the person behind the project, and we'll also bring in a few filmmakers to find out what they contributed and what it's like to make documentaries in 2021. With us now is Rocky Walls, Executive Director of Hudox. Rocky, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Miriam. Really excited to be here.
Well, how did this all get started?
Well, like many things, somewhere in the thick of the 2020 shutdown, we were just consuming media like crazy. I was watching all kinds of stuff, like a lot of folks were. And it occurred to me that I was really interested in local stories. I was really interested in what was going on in my own community and here in our home state of Indiana. And I'm a filmmaker, so I know a lot of people who have made films and documentaries, but I didn't really even know, as a filmmaker, I didn't even know where to go to find them. And I was thinking, like, what about people out there who all of a sudden were all even more interested in eating local and shopping local? What about watching local? What about understanding some of the documentaries and stories that are right in our own backyards or in our own neighborhoods or in our own state? And it kind of occurred to me that there's all these new streaming services popping up. We've got Disney Plus and HBO Max, and now there's a Discovery Plus, and Paramount's got their own. And I thought, wow, you know, I don't think this would have worked 3 or 4 years ago. But now the idea of a niche streaming platform for a very specific type of content almost seemed like a no-brainer. And so that was kind of the genesis of the idea. And obviously it took a lot of work to get it to where it is now, but that's where it all started.
Yeah, it seems like 2020 really inspired a lot of people to do different entrepreneurial things. So that's pretty cool that you came up with this idea. Well, when it comes to streaming services too, I think there's so many to choose from and there's so many things within those platforms. It makes sense to have sort of a niche thing where you can find something sort of curated for you rather than trying to scroll through hundreds of titles.
Yeah, 100%. You know, there could be a lot said for, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, we used to, you know, scroll through very specific channels that had very specific things on cable or satellite or whatever. And then, you know, just a few years ago, it was basically all Netflix and maybe Netflix and Hulu. And now we're kind of back to the idea that if you want specific things, maybe there's a specific streaming service for you. Certainly I know that my kids hang out on Disney Plus pretty much without a lot of supervision. So it's a safe place for them. Similarly, we want Hudox to be a place for people to be able to hear and watch local stories, things that are going to help them understand their communities better and hopefully understand how to make their little corner of the world a better place.
What was the biggest challenge in making this a reality?
I think the biggest challenge with anything like this, it's like the same with eating local or shopping local. The challenge is that we live in a world of a lot of abundance, a lot of noise, especially with social media and digital distractions. I think that most people in Indiana probably care about their communities, about the stories that maybe are most relevant to them because of the geography. But remembering to set aside time to look for that or watch that, kind of making that choice instead of binging the newest Netflix show is probably the biggest challenge, honestly. Like, building the platform wasn't as hard as getting people to remember to come and watch, make that choice. Like I said, very similarly to choosing the local restaurant as opposed to the big chain. Not that I've got anything against chains, but I think that making that conscious choice can sometimes be hard in a really, really busy world where there's kind of constant media coming your way.
Yeah, I would say from my own personal experience, I feel like I got media fatigued in terms of binging shows, especially early on in the pandemic. I was just like, I can't watch any more shows. Like, this is unusual. I'm just not able to watch anymore. But yeah. When it comes to the stuff that you provide, documentaries, why did you feel it was important to have this type of a streaming service?
Just a little bit about sort of the last 4 or 5 years of my life. I actually produced and directed our company's first feature-length documentary film about a Danish concept called hygge. And it was during 2016 and 17 when the world was looking for some things to be distracted by and looking for ways to be a little happier. And one of the things, I won't get into the details of that particular documentary, but one of the things I learned from that experience, going to a country like Denmark, where things are very intimate there, contentment, being content with what you have, and the idea of social welfare and sharing a lot more with your community is really important. And through that experience, and then coming back and trying to understand how to continue making our world a little bit of a better place through documentary film, but also through my volunteer time and through my understanding of local politics and all these other things, I began to just realize how important it really is to understand local. We can spend a lot of time, scrolling through Facebook and thinking about huge problems, climate change and global hunger and things of that nature. And those things are important, but there's also something to be said for understanding the problems within our own neighborhood, even knowing our neighbors' names and understanding their needs and understanding the ways that we can make our own neighborhoods and communities better. And so for me, documentary film, it's not always about activism necessarily, but documentary film shares true stories about real people and real places that help connect you in a way that is entertaining, sure, but maybe not just entertaining. Maybe entertaining and informative, maybe entertaining and life-changing sometimes. And so for us, for Who Docs, we say, Who Docs, and then the tagline is sort of documentaries that inspire. We really want these documentaries to inspire people in ways that something that maybe you watch just for kicks, just for fun, or just for entertainment, maybe can't do.
I think that's a great point. Just the fact that, being able to take away something from what you're consuming, rather than just, I don't know, sometimes I feel like I'm just sitting there like a zombie watching something and I'm like, what did I just learn? Nothing. So I appreciate that you're focusing on sort of the local aspect. Are there specific documentaries that you have on the service, or is it anything Indiana related?
Great question. So the qualifying the qualifiers, I guess I should say, that we use is basically anything about Indiana or anything by Indiana filmmakers. So there's a lot. Most of it is about Indiana, and most of it is, in fact, Indiana filmmakers who have produced something about something Indiana related. But then there are also some filmmakers from outside of Indiana that have produced content about something Indiana related. And then there are a few. There's a whole section in Who Docs called Beyond Indiana, where we feature Indiana filmmakers. So Hoosier filmmakers who have gone outside of Indiana. And then you sort of get this like Hoosier lens on something outside of Indiana, which is pretty exciting too. So there just has to be that Indiana connection at some level for it to be on Who Docs.
Well, what does the service look right now? How many documentaries do you have listed?
We have over 30 titles that were part of our launch. Back in June, we launched with an initial 30 titles. There are several feature-length documentary films. There are a lot of short films, which are really great for something like this. I love feature-length films, but honestly, it's kind of refreshing to watch something that's 10 or 15 or 20 minutes long, too. There's something really special about being able to tell a story in that amount of time. And documentaries are really great for that length. So we have a lot of those. And then we have a couple of ongoing series as well, where you can see a few episodes. And then there are more episodes coming down the line, which is pretty exciting, too.
Are there any common themes you've noticed through the different films that you're hosting on this streaming service, or are they all over the place?
I think they're pretty special in that they're as unique as the filmmakers and the content. I can't say that there's like any really clear stylistic or thematic similarities. It's pretty exciting that they're all over the place. Some of them are about people. They're very biographical in that way. And some of them are about ideas or concepts, and some of them are historical. Some of them are student made. Some of them are made by production companies like mine, and some of them are made by individuals who just had a passion for a particular story and went out there and made a film. So it's pretty exciting that you get a really wide variety.
Well, how do local documentaries usually get a scene if they're not on a service like HuDocs? How would anybody know about them, that they're local?
Well, as a filmmaker, this was one of the key, there were really two key things that ignited this in my mind. And then as I began to talk to more and more people, I found that I wasn't the only person who felt this way. I already talked about the one thing that, you know, there's all this great content out there that people would probably love to watch if they could find it. But the other thing is that filmmakers, the other side of this is that there are all these exceptional filmmakers who are creating really amazing content. And then that question that you just posed is exactly the one they have to face. Imagine like it's like running a marathon in a lot of ways. You got these filmmakers who, driven sometimes exclusively by their passion, and nobody oftentimes is you know just handing them a bunch of money to do this. They've created a film and they watch the whole thing and it's finished and they take this deep breath and they think, all right, I did it, I'm done. And in reality, some of them know this ahead of time, but many of them are blindsided by how incredibly difficult it is to then get people to watch the darn thing. It's a sort of debated fact or figure that oftentimes Hollywood films and many of our kind of, we think of big budget blockbuster kinds of films, spend about as much money marketing and distributing their film as they do making them. And so it's pretty incredible to think that I've often shared with people, once your film is done, your job has just begun, because you really have to get that out there in front of people. And so unfortunately, what would happen a lot of the time is that filmmakers would take their film and they would just share it on YouTube or share it on Facebook, and 300 or 400 people, or maybe a few thousand people, might watch it, you know, and then mom and dad comment on it and say, "Way to go! I'm so proud of you." And then that's pretty much it. Nothing else happens, and that was a really discouraging thing for me, and I know for a lot of other filmmakers, because the reality is there are people that want to see it. It's just a matter of getting it in front of them.
Well, we're talking about HuDocs, a new streaming service launched earlier this summer that was exclusively built to present Indiana documentaries. After a quick break, we'll bring in some filmmakers to talk about the projects they have on the service. I'm Miriam Sove. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about HuDocs, a new streaming service launched earlier this summer that was exclusively built to present Indiana documentaries. We're joined again by Rocky Wells, executive director of HuDocs, and we're bringing in the first filmmaker we'll hear from today, Caitlin Calhoun, a documentary filmmaker at Teardrop Pictures. Thank you for joining us, Caitlin.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Caitlin, tell us about the movies or the films that you have on HuDocs. One of them is called Snag in the Plan, and it's about bats. How did that project come about?
Right. Well, both of my films, Snag in the Plan and Braided with the Current, are Indiana-based nature films. And Snag in the Plan actually came about because I was recommended to the Indiana Forest Alliance by the folks that had seen Braided with the Current, which is a film funded by Indian Humanities back in 2018, and it's just kind of fun how it all progressed.
And with Snag in the Plan, it's presented by the Indiana Forest Alliance. What did that partnership look like from your perspective as the filmmaker? Is that common to get someone to partner with you on something?
Sure. It kind of came out of the blue for me. They approached me after being recommended by Indian Humanities folks, and it was one of those things where they are doing eco split surveys of different wildlife over the summer each summer, and they wanted to document this search for the northern long-eared bat in the Hoosier National Forest. And so they approached me and they said, "Hey, we want to do this." And so I kind of put together that budget and was like, "Here's what it's going to look like." And it was definitely, it turned out to be a partnership of a bit of fundraising on Teardrop Pictures' end, and a bit of funds from Indiana Forest Alliance, and all of that just came to fruition through kind of their interest in filming it slash kind of my tenacity to get it to the finish line.
And were you able to have sort of creative freedom on that project?
Yes. Yeah, that was definitely, you know, there's a collaboration in at, when it's all said and done, they took a peek at it. But when it came down to me being the expert and the filmmaker, they kind of let me run with it, which was absolutely wonderful. And something definitely that's a dream when you're collaborating with someone and you get to kind of take your specialty and run.
Well, Rocky, you mentioned earlier about the internet, how people were posting their documentaries on YouTube as a way to get it seen. You know, in one way, that might be an easy way to get in front of audiences, but there's also so much stuff online and it can be hard to get noticed that way. I'm just thinking about a lot of folks who were like, well, I'll just try to go viral online. What is the benefit of having WhoDocs versus somebody just posting stuff on their YouTube channel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the funny thing is that I remember we started 12 Stars Media, my company, in 2007. So it used to be that if you created something like Snagging the Plan, you could put it on YouTube, you could put it on Facebook, and lots of people probably would see it because there wasn't this level of saturation that there is now. And what we've found is that we do need specificity. We do need channels to cater to very specific interests and needs. And so I think that the value that WhoDocs brings is that folks who are interested in environmental issues in Indiana, for example, can watch Snagging the Plan or Braided with the Current, and they can understand a little bit better how to be good stewards of their land, the land that we all share here in Indiana.
I mean, I think it's great. It's not complicated. You can find the films about Indiana without having to do a Google search and look for it. Caitlin, you're on the board for WhoDocs. What do you think of it so far as a filmmaker, as a board member? What has it been like for you?
Sure. Just going kind of from that vein, I frankly was like, cool, we're done with the film. It's online now. WhoDocs has truly like breathed in new life to these films in the sense of now they will get to be seen. It's wonderful to produce the film, share the film kind of with your close network and try and have a film festival run. But when it comes down to the life beyond continuing and just having it be available, I don't believe if you searched Indiana nature documentary that I have the Google SEO capacity to get it to where it would show up. So truly it's now available in that way, which is wonderful. Also just being on the board as a filmmaker, I've just absolutely loved being a part and feeling that this is almost a pivotal moment for Indiana filmmakers believing in themselves, leaning into their passions, knowing that there is a landing place when all is said and done. And that just gets me really excited.
Well, what made you decide to, I guess, put your stuff on WhoDocs as opposed to like Amazon? I think you can upload things on Amazon, for example, if you're a filmmaker.
Right. Frankly, the community of it all is absolutely marvelous. Again, it was a bit of serendipity, maybe a bit of branding that connected me and Rocky. And I heard from him. He reached out about this. He sent me a marathon reaching out to filmmakers this time last year. Really kind of got the kickoff of what is now our library. And serving on the programming board, we get to kind of take that and run with it. So I suppose to answer your question, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Where were we?
I mean, what's the benefit of a streaming service over these big conglomerates?
Absolutely. I think knowing that the audience that my films are intended for, which is local, outdoor, nature, Indiana, maybe Midwest-based film lovers, that's exactly the audience that's going to Who Docs also.
Well, Rocky, how valuable is it to have filmmakers on board with this project?
Well, it's essential, to be candid. I mean, without the filmmakers, there isn't Who Docs. I think that to kind of piggyback off of what Caitlin was saying there, you know, if you upload your content to Amazon, that's great. And you get to put that logo on your film website or whatever. And that's fantastic. And maybe for some films, that's what you should do. And maybe you should do that and have it on Who Docs. But you know, it's that old adage of being a little fish in a huge pond, or being a big fish in a small pond. And I think that's what we're doing here with Who Docs. So when you think about the filmmakers and the value that they are to this whole thing, it's immeasurable. Because I think that when you think about Hoosiers that do want to watch local stories, especially local documentaries like this, you know, there's great places to get your news. But a documentary story like what we're talking about here with Snagging the Plan or Braided with the Current or any of the others that we're going to be talking about, again, there's just a giant pond. I mean, it's an ocean, really. I mean, like, that's what somebody would say. If you ask them, if they don't know about Who Docs and you ask a Hoosier, where would you go to find an Indiana documentary? They would go, the internet? Well, that's too big of a pond.
Yeah, there's too much stuff on there. You can get lost for hours. And I'm not speaking from experience or anything. Well, before I let you go, Caitlin, are there any other projects that you have coming up?
Sure. I'm actually currently wrapping. It's called Hellbender in the Blue, which is about these slimy salamanders that exist actually here in Indiana and all over the eastern United States. And they are in trouble kind of as a result of our water quality and other pollution related things. So that'll be wrapping at the end of this month, actually. So I'm really excited. And I think not only it's just been a beautiful progression and the steps to get here. And I'm really excited for potentially having on Who Docs. So
Caitlin Calhoun is a documentary filmmaker at Teardrop Pictures, whose movies Snag in the Plan and Braided with the Current both appear on the Indiana streaming service Who Docs. Caitlin, thanks for joining us. Now we're bringing in a new guest filmmaker, Dan Rybicki.
I first heard about Larry after seeing a dance performance. I live in Gary, and there was a dance performance at an art gallery basically up the street from where I live, and I was really blown away by the quality of the performance. It was, you know, students, and I'd asked someone, you know, who was responsible for this performance, and I found out, you know, the performance was you know, students at an arts high school, really right around the corner from where I lived, and the teacher was Larry, Larry Brewer, and so I basically just went over to the school and met him, and you know, that began this project in my relationship with Larry.
As a filmmaker, how do you decide or figure out what would make a great subject, or let's say you met Larry, what compelled you to continue through and turn this into a documentary?
That's a really good question. I mean, this might sound sort of cheesy, but I think you really do have to love the people that you're going to spend time filming in some ways. I mean, no matter what it is, and be curious about them both, like want to know what it is about them that makes them that makes you interested in them, so you don't have them entirely, I guess, figured out, and like really, you know, sort of want to spend time with them and have sort of, and then have them want to actually be filmed, I think is important. I mean, I guess at first a subject could be reluctant, but that ultimately that person does warm up to the idea of wanting to share with you their life. But, you know, I think oftentimes, you know, by the time you're done filming, if you get close enough to the person who is your main subject, you realize in some ways that person is a reflection of you or a part of you that you're interested in exploring that you didn't realize.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you're mentioning just, you know, developing the relationships with folks to be able to get them to agree to be part of something that might be very personal.
Definitely. I mean, and certainly for longer term documentaries, that would definitely be the case. And even though this was a 26 minute film, I worked with Larry over the course of 3 years filming. So we, you know, certainly did develop a friendship and a relationship, which I think anytime that you're filming with subjects, it happens, you know, as it would be important to, because unless you've been the subject of a documentary, I think there's a lot of vulnerability there in terms of, you know, being in front of the camera and trusting the person that is filming you behind the camera.
Well, Rocky, how important is it to get films on your service from around the state? I think a lot of times when we talk about Indiana, people think it's Indianapolis focused and it's always all about Indianapolis, but it seems like documentaries are a good way for people to learn about places they've never been.
100%. I think one of the things that's really special about Indiana is that we have quite a lot of diversity spread across Indiana, and that can be good and really challenging at times when you think about the urban and rural divides that exist, or when you think about the really major differences but also similarities in our different cities across Indiana. When you think about the differences between Indianapolis and Gary, for example, I think it's really special to be able to watch something like Larry from Gary and meet someone really special and really important. Like Dan said, you know, I think it's true that Dan must have really fallen in love with Larry in a lot of ways, because that comes through in the film when you watch it. By the end, but really it's much sooner than that. You love Larry. And I think that as somebody who, like for me personally, grew up in central Indiana and really only knew Indianapolis and the surrounding counties, I didn't have a very clear idea of what Gary was like, or what Fort Wayne is like, or what Monrovia or Martinsville is like. I mean, you could throw out a name of a dozen or more small towns or bigger cities that we've all heard, but probably either have no conception or misconceptions about. And so I think even if you just think about understanding our home state, the state that we live in, there's a lot that we can learn from each other and the different experiences that we either share or maybe have no ability to relate to at all.
Well, speaking of Gary and this documentary, Larry from Gary, Dan, what made this community interesting to feature? How did you, I mean, you talked about it a little bit earlier, but how did you even decide to do something in Gary?
I mean, I think in part I'm a homebody, so I often make documentaries that are nearby because I'm not one of those people that wants to go, you know, on safaris or something and make documentaries far away from where I live. And so literally this film was made, you know, the school was in walking distance from where I live. And, you know, I also live my life for pleasant surprises. And so I feel like in terms of Gary, I feel like a lot of people have preconceived notions of what Gary is. And to think about the fact that there was this former military man who devoted 30 years of his life teaching in a public high school arts and dance to students, some of which, and, you know, where I was able to go and film in New York City, you know, a student who was, you know, a principal dancer at Alvin Ailey, you know, it just seemed like the most pleasant surprise of all. And certainly, I don't think the people that I, you know, was able to film in Gary, the dance sequences that Larry choreographed that we included in the film in beautiful areas of Gary, where there's, you know, beautiful beach near where I live, are images or, you know, people that, you know, a lot of people who live in Indiana maybe are familiar with when they think of Gary. So yeah, it was a real opportunity. And, you know, and of course, having the film, which was in part funded by Indiana Humanities before the pandemic, shared and screened in different cities and localities throughout the state, To talk about Gary and open people's eyes to the sort of, you know, arts and, you know, what was going on here was really important. And having the film now streaming and able to be seen by people in Indiana so they can have different ideas about the city is so important to me and the people in the film.
Well, Dan, before we wrap up here, is there anything else you're working on that you'd like folks to know about?
I mean, at the moment, this film is still rolling out. I just got news that I can't share yet about a really great festival that this film will be in the fall. And I have a couple larger projects that I also can't speak about. But the exciting thing is that this film, you know, Larry from Gary, will be, like I said, it has more places that it will be in. And Larry, I think it actually in September is going to be part of a community conversations for the Legacy Foundation here in Lake County. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm grateful that it has this opportunity to continue to spread the word about some of the great people and you know, great arts practitioners here in Gary.
Dan Rybicki is a filmmaker whose movie Larry from Gary is on the new streaming service Hudox. I'm Miriam So. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam So. Back now to our discussion on Hudox, a new streaming service launched earlier this summer that was exclusively built to present Indiana documentaries. We're joined again by Executive Director Rocky Walls, and we're bringing on one last filmmaker to talk about the documentary she has on the service. Rachel Hardy is the filmmaker behind Black Unscripted. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Can you tell us about Black Unscripted and where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so Black Unscripted is a short documentary that deals with this idea of Blackness and what it means to be Black. So oftentimes there are stereotypes that are put on Black people, both from within our own community and outside of our community, that kind of says like, so you should listen to like this type of music or watch these type of shows or have these specific interests in order to really be considered Black. And anything that deviates from those kind of stereotypical views kind of takes away some form of your Blackness, which is really weird. So it deals with that. It features five different people who have very different backgrounds and perspectives. And so within those five people, we also touch on subtopics such as albinism. There is a guy in it who is albino. We also talk about like vitiligo awareness because one of the ladies who's in the documentary has vitiligo. And then we also talk about colorism and immigration. There's a guy who was born and raised in Zimbabwe and then moved to the US living in Indiana. And so he talks about kind of the difference in those racial views coming from a place where you're a majority to now being in the US where Blacks are considered the minority. And the idea from it really came because at the time I was working in video production still, but I had a part-time job and it really just felt like I was struggling to be creative within the job that I held. So it was a way for me to kind of just really challenge my own creativity and see what I could do. And there have been oftentimes like throughout my childhood growing up where people would make comments that kind of made you think about whether or not you liked certain things or try to make you kind of conform to what they believed Black people should act like. And that actually happened when I was on a freelance gig. I happened to be the only Black person in maybe a group of like 10 people. And they were talking about music and concerts at the time. And I remember one person brought up a rapper that she liked and she mentioned the rapper to the group and nobody else in the group knew who the rapper was. And then she turned to me and made a comment along the lines of, oh, well, I know you know who he is and I know that you like him. And I was like, actually, no, I really don't listen to his music. And the look on her face was like extreme shock. Like she didn't understand why I would have never heard of that rapper or why I wouldn't enjoy going to that specific concert. And so that was when it hit me, when I realized this has been happening for a while. And so just kind of taking that experience and really wanting to look more into why is this kind of the common thing that has happened over the years, where I keep feeling like I'm in these positions where people assume what I should like or assume kind of my interest. And then when I tell them that it's something different from that, there's this shock. And so that kind of, I guess at that moment was the launching pad for me really wanting to look into this topic and explore it more.
I love that you shared all of that. Thank you so much. And I feel like it's so relatable to so many people when they feel like they're boxed into something, and the fact that you were able to take that and create something out of it is really impressive. Rocky, films like this on WhoDocs, how has that been for the streaming service?
Amazing. I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with Rachel around about the time she was trying to figure out where she wanted to distribute this film. And Rachel can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's available exclusively on WhoDocs right now, which is really fantastic. It is exactly the type of thing that we've been talking about, where, you know, around about this time last year, even a little earlier this time last year, anti-racist books started becoming, you know, bestsellers. And the idea of understanding people of color and understanding ways to dismantle systemic racism, or even just checking your biases, like, you know, what Rachel just described, the experience that people can have when someone thinks that they know what you like or who you are, when in fact they really don't. This kind of thing became very mainstream and very, very popular all of a sudden. And I think it's great to be able to pick up an anti-racist book from Barnes and Noble or order it off of Amazon and understand those kinds of concepts from a 20,000 foot view. But I think what's really special about what Rachel has done and what other films like hers on WhoDocs can accomplish is this gives you a perspective that's hyper-local. These are folks who live around you and possibly represent somebody in your own neighborhood. This is from a filmmaker who at the time was living in Indiana. And I think that local aspect and understanding not just an idea or an issue or a way that we can make our world a better place, make our communities better places, from a really high level, this brings it down to something much more local and much more specific, which I think is really valuable.
Well, Rachel, when you put this together, what made you go down the documentary route versus like a fictional film, a movie or a series?
You know, I personally have just had a very strong interest in documentaries. And I feel like that's really where my strengths in storytelling lie, is more of the telling of real stories through real people, as opposed to like writing a script and getting actors and all of that. And then I also just think there's something really special about being able to hear these personal stories from these people in their own words. So that was really why I chose to go the documentary route.
Rocky, we talked a little bit earlier about the range of topics covered in the documentaries that are hosted on WhoDocs. Has anything surprised you about what people are making films about?
I think I'm pleasantly surprised every time I see the description and some of the images from a film, because in a way it's like taking a drink of cold water on a hot day. You know, we are like we talked about, just bombarded with media, with news, with commercial advertising, and I think that by and large a lot of it is really draining and stressful, for me at least. And I think that when I see something that a filmmaker has taken the time to put together, it reminds me of how there is such a great opportunity, and not to sound too fluffy, but like there's good in the world. Like we can see Rachel's work and see these individuals that she spent time kind of tracking down and then sitting down with and having a conversation. We can understand a little bit more about bats in Indiana and what that means for our forests. So we can understand a little bit more about Gary and learn a little bit about an individual who made amazing differences in a lot of young people's lives. And I think that all of those things, because they're real, because they're true, are like a breath of fresh air. And so it is surprising. It shouldn't be, because we shouldn't really be surprised that there are all these great stories out there. But I think right now I am a little surprised every single time I see it. And I think that can be, you know, good and bad. I hope I get to a point where I'm not really surprised anymore. I'm just really thankful that we have all this great stuff that's being done here in Indiana.
Rachel, you're from Indiana, and the people in Black Unscripted lived here at the time, but you've moved to Atlanta since then. That's my understanding. What got you to leave Indiana?
Actually, it was a very hard decision for me because I was born and raised in Indiana, grew up there, and I honestly really love Indiana. I love the feel of the town, of being in Indianapolis. I'm really close to my family. But it was always just difficult for me to find full-time, consistent video work. A lot of the things that I was doing was always freelance, so they'd be contract things here or there, or landing part-time jobs. And so it just felt like I had to move career-wise. And so that was honestly something that I struggled with for a while, because I felt like I was being pulled to go out of state to where there were bigger video markets. Because Atlanta, there's a lot more video work, and like finding that work is a lot easier. But I did really struggle with wanting to be home. So ultimately, career decision to move and be able to land a full-time job.
Rocky, when you hear that, I mean, how do you keep talent in Indiana if it sounds like there aren't opportunities?
Well, I think that that's part of our goal with Who Docs too. I think that we want to elevate the conversation and elevate the culture around filmmaking in Indiana, because I think that there are a lot of opportunities, but Rachel's right. They are harder to find. And if you want to work on a really huge movie set, or if you want to work on a big TV series, there are definitely very limited opportunities. I think specifically in the field of documentary, there might be a little more to choose from. And so I think that what has to happen is Indiana has to recognize that filmmaking and storytelling in general, and then just expanding that to just creative arts in the creative field in general, as broadly as you want to draw that circle. It's important for Indiana to continue focusing on how to appreciate those that we have and try and keep them here, and how to attract people to come here to Indiana. And that's a conversation for another whole day. But I do think that's important. And I think that's what Who Docs wants to try and contribute to.
Well, are there any efforts underway to make things more attractive for filmmakers in Indiana?
There are things. I think that you'd have to have somebody on that understands tax incentives and things like that way better than I do to mm-hmm. talk about that. But you can look up the storied history that Indiana has with tax incentives. I also think that there's a lot to be said for recognizing the work that's here and amplifying that work. And so whether it's Who Docs or any of the other Indiana organizations that can elevate, you know, industry partners of ours at Who Docs are our Heartland Film Festival and the Indie Film Fest. And as we grow to try and embrace a whole statewide community and ecosystem here, there are other film festivals and folks who do focus on shining a spotlight on Indiana created content. But we need Hoosiers to kind of wake up and recognize the amazing storytelling that is happening here, and to kind of say, just like you would for your local restaurant or your local boutique gift shop, to step up and say, we love you, Indiana filmmakers, and we want more of you. We want you to stay here. We want you to make films about our great state and the people and places in it, and make that voice heard.
Well, when it comes to the stuff that you have on Who Docs, are you presenting any of those at film festivals? Does Who Docs have a film festival?
No, Hudox is kind of picked its place to live in the ecosystem of film in Indiana very carefully, and we definitely don't want to reinvent the wheel. And so we've got some really incredible film festivals that we partner with, and so you'll see films that are on Hudox. They will have already been at film festivals oftentimes, or potentially at times they will be on Hudox and maybe featured at film festivals. Actually, we have representatives from both the biggest film festivals in Indianapolis on our board, who are very great at helping us to understand what's going on with both Heartland and Indie Film Fest. And I think that Hudox kind of exists in its own corner of this ecosystem, where we want to focus on the online distribution of documentary films. And so creating events or creating festivals is not on our docket, but rather we want to amplify what others are already doing in that arena.
Rachel, documentaries are definitely a lot of work. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that people don't see before you put out the final project. What was it like having your film be released on Hudox and for people to be able to see it?
Honestly, I think Hudox really has been a blessing. I think it was mentioned before, but I was in the moment where I had been through film festivals. So I went through the whole film festival circuit. And then once that was done, I really didn't know where my film should land at that point. I felt like it wasn't over, that there was more to be done with it, but I just didn't know where to go outside of festivals since that run had been over. And luckily, Rocky reached out to me and I met him and he told me about Hudox, and it just felt like the perfect fit. And then also just like the community of being able to be featured on there with other Indiana filmmakers, because before Hudox, I would have never known where to go to find work from other Indiana filmmakers or even find out what's out there. So it feels like it's kind of built this connection and kind of this community. And that's something that for me has been really special to be a part of.
Well, speaking of connection, Rocky, are you hopeful Hudox will help connect filmmakers to each other and lead to more creative teams making films more than what we have right now?
Yeah, definitely. We've seen it a little bit already, anecdotally. I mean, I don't have big numbers to pull out for that particular question, but I know that there have been two or three times just I personally have been reached out to by other filmmakers who said, hey, I'm so glad we met because I have this project I'm working on and I really need a director of photography next weekend. And I was able to connect people to be able to work together. And I think that that's one thing that I heard over and over again from filmmakers also as we led up to the launch of Hudox, that the filmmaking community is also sort of siloed, and there are a lot of folks who work together pretty often and they really don't know anybody else in the industry. And I think that comes from having a less than active filmmaking industry, like Rachel had talked about. You know, we're not Atlanta, we're not LA, we're not Chicago or New York. And so I think that because folks are sort of working in an area of the state where they're sort of able to do enough work to keep themselves busy and maybe pay their bills, they're not necessarily getting out and connecting at a citywide or statewide level. And I do hope that Hudox continues to be that community, maybe not exclusively, but at least a big part of that community building momentum that we can find.
I want to thank both of you for joining us this afternoon and all of the filmmakers who are on today. Rocky Walls is executive director of Hudox, and Rachel Hardy is a filmmaker whose movie Black Unscripted is on the streaming service. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yace, and Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.